case number 075130, Antonio Rosello, on behalf of Joaquin Rosello and Christina Rosello, appellant. Mrs. Michael J. Astrew, Commissioner of Social Security. Ms. Arnett, the appellant, and Mr. Haynes, the appellate.
May it please the court. My name is Jennifer Arnett of Sturck and Sturck and Levan. We represent on a pro bono basis appellant here, Christina Rosello. I'd like to reserve 1 minute for rebuttal. This case is about a severely disabled woman. Her family has been trying for the last 15 years to obtain for her benefits that she needs and to which she is entitled. Christina is a very type of person to whom disability benefits are meant to be provided. Her disorder, schizoaffective disorder, has landed her in numerous psychiatric institutions over the years. She has been disabled since at least 16 years old, and her work attempts were subsidized by her family member employers. Notwithstanding Christina's qualification for disabled adult child benefits, the Social Security Administration has made mistake after mistake in her case. They failed to develop the record. They failed to hold a hearing on new evidence that formed the basis for the final determination of the commissioner. They failed to notify her of her right to counsel and her right to free counsel until after a negative decision by the ALJ. And the administration even lost the record after the ALJ hearing, asking Christina's father to reassemble the record for the administration. The very significant delay that Christina and her family have endured are simply inexcusable. The case has been pending for 15 years. I'm here today to request that the court reverse the decision of the Commissioner of Social Security and remand solely for the calculation of benefits. The Commissioner's decision is not supported by substantial evidence.
Wouldn't we ordinarily remand?
Yes, Your Honor. Ordinarily, you would remand. This, however, is not an ordinary case. As I mentioned, it's been pending for 15 years, and the record contains substantial evidence that Christina does qualify for disability benefits. In such circumstances, reversal is appropriate. Now, with regard to the evidence in the record shows that Christina was disabled since well before 22 years old, and that she did not engage in substantial gainful activity, which is called SGA. Now, with regard to SGA, that work was subsidized by her family member employers. The government does not address this point in their brief.
That's a key issue. You're stating the conclusion, right? But that she was subsidized. Appeals counsel say she wasn't subsidized, or there wasn't sufficient evidence that she was subsidized?
Actually, no, Your Honor. The appeals counsel does not address subsidy in its decision. The appeals counsel discusses the letters from Christina's family members who employed her and supervised her, but it does not address subsidy at all. And they are mandated to look at the issue of subsidy under the Social Security rulings, 83-33. The letters from Christina's family members, her uncle Jorge and her sister Marta, make clear that the only reason that she was employed was because she was a family member. Her uncle Jorge says that were she not his niece, he would not have hired her because of her mental disability. He says that she was functioning at a very basic level.
I thought that she did the clerical work that was asked of her.
She did simple clerical work like stuffing envelopes. That's correct, Your Honor.
Some people do that for their job, right? That's their job.
That's correct. Some people do that for your job. Most people are not supervised constantly while stuffing envelopes, Your Honor. And Christina was. They had a close family friend at that employment who watched her constantly, is what Christina's uncle Jorge says in his letter.
Where in 83-33?
Yes, Your Honor.
Where does it say that that's sufficient?
83-33 has several factors that are to be looked at to determine whether or not there is a subsidy. For example, mental impairment is involved. That is one factor of a subsidy.
Yeah, well, where's the one that says that her supervision makes it a subsidy?
If you look at on my Westlaw printout, it's at page 4, point number 6. quote, the nature and severity of the impairment indicate that the employee receives unusual help from others doing the work. That is one factor.
Unusual help, okay.
Correct, unusual help. And I would submit that having somebody supervise her while she's stuffing envelopes is unusual help. In addition, while she was working with her sister Marta, she handed out towels, another very simple task. And Marta says that she had obtained this position for her so that she could supervise her sister directly and watch over her handing out of towels. That is also unusual supervision. Another factor to be looked at is what led to the termination of the employment. Why is a person no longer working there? What led to the termination here? It's not termination, but she could not continue on, as both the uncle and sister state, because she regressed and had to go to a psychiatric hospital, where she was there for 2 months immediately following her work attempts. She was highly aggressive and had to be medicated. She was put on lithium. When asked, she thought that she was there to learn English. She was hallucinating and delirious. Upon discharge 2 months later, her aunt and uncle, who were watching over her at the time in Puerto Rico, were warned to keep her away from firearms, and they were told of her suicidal tendencies. 1 year later, she was back in another psychiatric institution, and over the years, she cycled through numerous institutions and continues to this day to be taking some very serious medications. Now, with respect to disability, we have in the record certifications from Christina's treating physician from the years 1980 to 1983, Dr. Cujot in Spain. Dr. Cujot diagnosed Christina with major depressive disorder.
Is any of this contested by the government?
With regard to subsidy, no. They do not address subsidy in their brief.
No, but I mean, you're talking about her impaired conditions. There's no real doubt about that, is there?
With respect to her current impaired condition, there is no contest about that. That is correct. The government does contest her previous condition from 1980 to 1983. Under the regulations, we have to show that Christina was disabled before her 22nd birthday, which here would have been September 14th, 1986. And what we have in the record is we have evidence from 1980 to 1983. We have her uncle Jorge's affidavit saying that she was functioning at a very basic level while he was under her care because of her mental disability. And we have in the record a 1987 hospital report. She entered the hospital while she was still 22, had her 23rd birthday there, saying that she had to be heavily medicated and restricted. But from 1987 on, no, there is no contest there. She is clearly a very disabled woman. In fact, we would submit she is the very picture of the type of person for whom disability benefits are meant to help. And I think that key point cannot be lost here.
Yes, the only issue before us, as I understand it, is the board's determination that there was substantial
gainful activity. The appeals counsel's decision was that she engaged in substantial gainful activity. That is correct, Your Honor. That decision is erroneous, we submit. The ALJ below had determined that she was not disabled before 22. But
the council did not rely on that finding.
That's correct. That is correct, Your Honor. Now, as again, we are here to ask that the court reverse the decision of the commissioner. We think that there is sufficient evidence in the record for reversal and to remand solely for the calculation of benefits. However, I understand that this is not the usual relief to ask for. This is unusual. It's extraordinary. It is an extraordinary case. It has been pending for 15 years. Christina is not somebody who's getting better. She needs relief. Her family is at their wits' end, as her father has stated in numerous letters to the administration. If the court would like to look at remand, there are many factors here that point clearly to a remand: failure to develop the record, failure to hold a hearing on new evidence, failure to inform her of her right to counsel, and silly mistakes such as losing the record. I see that I'm encroaching on my rebuttal time, so if the court has no more questions, I'll reserve the rest of my time. Thank you.
May it please the court, Fred Haynes for the government. The issues in this case are whether the appeals counsel's decision that Christina engaged in substantial gainful activity in 1986 and 87, whether that is supported by substantial evidence, and whether or not it's tainted by legal error. We submit that the decision by the appeals counsel is fully supported by the earnings records that were placed into evidence, and the appeals counsel very carefully went through in its decision the reasons why it did not accept the claimant's arguments that her work did not constitute a substantial gainful activity. That is an issue.
Counsel,
yes.
Ms. Arnett says the counsel did not look at these factors under 8333. Are you disagreeing with that characterization?
I'm disagreeing to this extent, Your Honor. The appeals counsel goes through very carefully and discusses the affidavits and the evidence that was placed in the record by the claimant, Christina, and it explains why it doesn't consider these these statements made by her uncle and sister. It doesn't consider them to defeat the fact that what she was doing was substantial gainful activity. And it does go through a very thorough analysis of that. Now, you may agree or disagree with that, but under the substantial evidence test, the question is there enough evidence that the decision is correct? Not that it's the decision you would make on that evidence. It doesn't even have to be a preponderance of the evidence, simply the amount of evidence that a reasonable person would rely on. Now, they have argued in their brief that the appeals counsel's decision was erroneous because there were impairment-related work expenditures. In point of fact, that argument was not raised in the district court. There is no evidence that there were any impairment-related work expenses. There is, in fact, absolutely no evidence that during the period November 1983 to September 1987 that the claimant had any medical treatment, any hospitalization,
well,
anything.
When her uncle or her father says that her earnings were used in part to pay for her care, are you saying that wasn't during the relevant period?
Your Honor, I think her father says the only evidence of impairment-related work expenses is the suggestion by the father's, I forget if it's a letter or a declaration, that the money was used for various purposes, including payment of her expenses of her illness. There is absolutely, and she was not living with her father at that time. She was living in Puerto Rico with her uncle and his family. So we say there is no further evidence other than that.
So there is that.
Yeah, that's it. That's the total evidence.
Well, it was an affidavit, and it's directly on point. I don't know why the fact that she's living with her uncle rather than her father at that moment is significant, but the fact is it's unrebutted evidence.
Well, I don't think I would agree with that, Your Honor. First of all, you have the foundation issue of what did he know about her treatment during that period, and secondly, there is no evidence whatsoever.
That's a question the appeals counsel or the commissioner might have wanted to follow up on, but didn't.
I don't think I would agree with that. I would say when
you're just being so disagreeable today, yeah, Mr. Hank. Right.
When you're faced with a record that's absolutely barren as to any treatment between 1983 and September of 1987, I don't see how you can say, well, they carried, you know, they should have found there were impairment-related work experiences, expenditures.
Is it common ground here that the authority administration has to assure itself of a complete record?
It has an obligation to have a complete record, Your Honor, but that doesn't mean that they must go out and ferret out every single conceivable.
No, but if
disparity.
Somebody says her earnings are being used in part to defray the cost of her illness, it seems to me that it's hard to conclude that there's no evidence that there was that she had impairment-related expenses, unless one did go out and either say, well, show us documentation or explain yourself further in order to dispel that evidence.
Can I fall back a little bit and point out that what we're dealing with here is impairment-related work expenses. The fact that you may be taking psychoactive drugs is not an impairment-related work expenditure. That's just for your general health. Impairment-related work experiences would be out of the ordinary. So if you were a person that had to take medicine every day, that is not an impairment-related work expenditure. And again, I note this was not raised in the district court. We very much feel that this case is not ripe. Assuming your honors disagree with the agency's decision here, we think very much that this case is not ripe for the award of benefits, because there has never been a final agency decision.
15 years, it's not right.
Your Honor, you've got to understand that...
I understand.
Yep, you understand the circumstances.
You could call it 11, since four of them ran in this building.
Well, one of the reasons, it took the agency, I guess, from 1993, although actually the child application for benefits was put in February of 94, it took them up to 2000, but that was because they were giving repeated chances, opportunities to address the issues and persuade them she was entitled to benefits. Now, that process is one that does take time. Whatever you say, the Court of Appeals, your honors have said that the job of this Court of Appeals is not to award benefits, to decide that. It's the idea is that you remand it for the agency to make a decision on whether or not the person is disabled. Now, they seem to argue, well, she's disabled because she's now disabled, and there's no question that she has had very serious psychiatric issues after September of 1987. The problem with their argument there is...
I thought it started when she was 16.
Well, Your Honor, she...
Wasn't she institutionalized at some point?
Well, from 1980 to 1983, she was in Spain. She was under the care of a doctor. She was twice hospitalized for detoxification. There were issues of drug abuse as well as major depression. But other than that, stopping in November of 1983,
from 1980 to now, she's been in and out 14 times, right?
1987 to now, I don't know the number. She's been in and out a lot. I mean, there's no question that. But the point here is that, let's take multiple sclerosis. You may have that disease. It can be disabling, but the fact that you are not currently disabled, the fact that you have the disease that may eventually be disabling, does not mean you're disabled now.
Yeah, I think that's tough sledding in this case. It's just my view.
Well, I would respond to that, Your Honor, by saying that the Appeals Council decision that she was engaged in substantial gainful activity is a decision that was supported by substantial evidence, even if I mean, Your Honors might disagree with that, but the issue is, was it substantial evidence? Now, there are other issues that are, again, I point out the issue of impairment-related work expenditures was not raised in the district court. The argument that they make that the appeals counsel should not have considered the further evidence, that is an argument that was not, the further evidence at the appeals counsel level, the earnings reports, that argument was not made in the district court. And in fact, as we point out in our brief, there is authority that supports the position that the Social Security Administration, the Appeals Council, can, where it is more expeditious and where it doesn't adversely affect the claimant, the claimant's rights, they can consider evidence that's presented to them without remanding it to the administrative law judge. And given the magnitude of the workload of the Social Security Administration, that position, which is supported by their regulations and we submit the law, that position is one that ought not to be done away with, given their heavy workload.
Questions? Thank you, Mr. Haynes.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Your Honors, my opposing counsel raises several points that I would like to address. The first regards substantial evidence and that requirement. Under authority of this court, Andrews v. Railroad Retirement Board, this court said that the substantial evidence standard does not allow the administration to simply ignore undisputed evidence. The evidence of Christina's hospitalizations in Spain, her disabilities through the current date, are simply undisputed. With regard to the subsidy issue, which was not addressed at all by the Appeals Council, that evidence is undisputed. The Appeals Council did not, it simply went through the letters, described them, but did not discount those letters at all. It didn't, that Appeals Council decision did not mention the word subsidy. They did not look at the subsidy issue.
But they mentioned the factors that that you're adducing to show subsidy, right? That these were family found jobs and family supervised and all of that. And they say, well, that in itself doesn't preclude the work from constituting SGA.
You are correct, Your Honor, that they do say that these positions were obtained through family members. However, they do not mention subsidy. They do not cite to SSR 8333, which is a relevant regulation here. I'm sorry, the relevant ruling here. Just because they parrot back what the letters say does not mean that they have substantively addressed the issue of subsidy. And this is a point I remind the court that the government did not address in its brief. I see that I'm over. I have several other points, but perhaps I should ask the court if they have further questions of me.
Thank you, Ms. Arnett.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr.
Haynes.
Case is submitted.
Stand, please. This honorable court now stands adjourned until this morning at 11 a.m. in courtroom.